At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey, Tommy, here's a question for you that I've been pondering for the last week and a half. Why do people hate electric cars?
Well, I'm not sure everybody hates electric cars.
Yeah, but a lot of people really hate electric cars. So in this podcast, we're going to be talking about all the hate and all the love that electric vehicles get. And you might be wondering, well, Roman, that's political. And you always say that at TFL, we don't do cars. We do cars and trucks, not politics, which is absolutely true. So we're going to get the politics out of the way, but I'm more interested in is actually the technology of electric cars. So we're going to go through, I think, Tommy, kind of a checklist of what's good and bad about electric cars, and then maybe we could, at the end, figure out, not from a political standpoint, but from a pure technology standpoint, if electric cars are good or bad or both.
Well, I think we're also going to talk about some other stuff in today's podcast, like the future of off-roaders tied into the EV conversation, some of the cool cars we've driven, and some news of the week.
All right, that is coming up right now, so let's roll the music and let's start the show, Matt. Welcome to TFL Talk, the official podcast of TFL Studios, where we talk about the best, and yes, even sometimes the worst new cars. We talk about the coolest and sometimes the least uncool old cars. And of course, we give you an insider's view of all things automotive. And hopefully we do it having fun and sometimes arguing. So if you're driving, keep driving. And if you're not, why not? All right, Tommy, as you know, you did a video that got almost 2 million views. You want to tell us about that video? I know this is kind of in the truck world, but it also applies to cars. So we're going to talk about the video, nevertheless, on Talking Cars.
Andre and I took two trucks with two identical trailers, which was a lot of work, and a huge thank you to Complete Trailers for making that happen. But we took a GMC Sierra with a 6.2 liter V8, and then the new electric F-150 Lightning, and we towed two trailers on a little mini road trip to see how far they would go on a single tank and a single charge.
And what happened?
Well, we only made it about 86 miles until we had to charge up the F-150 Lightning, and that was with 9% remaining in the battery, so not quite completely empty, but basically the usable range towing this trailer, right around 100 miles, whereas Andre drove there and back. We did a little loop style. He drove 150-some miles and still had a quarter tank left, and obviously we talked about recharge time. I was waiting at that charger for 45 minutes. Andre could refill that gas truck in roughly 3 to 5 minutes, right? And we published the video, and I'm happy to say it did very, very well, all thanks to everybody watching. That was a fun video to make. It was a big effort.
Yeah, but what's more interesting is like the amount of hate that the truck got because it was only able to tow, let's be generous, 100 miles with a 6,000-pound trailer. So some of the comments are pretty enjoyable and pretty fun. For instance, enjoy the Lightning, City Boys, which is ironic because we own a ranch.
Yeah, but let's be honest. We're city folk here. Have you seen the shoes I'm wearing? Look at those Converse. Those are not country folk shoes.
Are those city folk shoes, Tommy?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just reading the comments right now. My phone, EVs suck. Time is money, and my time is worth more because obviously they're referring to the fact that it took a long time to recharge the Lightning. There's a lot of love for the Sierra and a lot of hate. This guy says, Breitbart News picked up your video. Congrats. So a lot of the conservative media picked it up to prove that electric vehicles are not ready for prime time. The electric vehicle will only make it to the grocery store and back if the store is closed. I mean, it's just hilarious the amount of comments here that people have put up there. And it became kind of a video as a poster child. EVs are a scam. I'm like going through this bull, you know what? Just take a covered wagon. Regressive liberal policies sending us back to the dark ages. So if you guys want to read those comments, go check out that video. But you know what I think is important here is that you know, this video was used by a lot of conservative media to prove that electric vehicles aren't ready for prime time, you know, that they're no good. And I understand that, right? I think a lot of people feel, and this is where we're going to get the politics out of the way, right? I think a lot of people feel that electric vehicles are being foisted on them, right? They like their diesel trucks. They like their regular trucks. They don't understand why we have to switch to electric trucks, and they feel like they're being given no choice. And when you've back people into a corner, then obviously the very first emotion you're going to get is knock it off, and I completely get that. So it's become kind of a litmus test as to whether, you know, you're conservative or Republican, I mean conservative or Democratic. It's become like a mask. It's become, you know, a contentious point of pride. If you hate electric trucks, that means that, you know, you don't believe in global warming or, you know, climate change. And if you do love electric vehicles, it means that you're trying to save the earth, yada, yada, yada. You understand the two arguments. But that's not what I want to talk about, Tommy. What I want to talk about is the technology, right? Because I'm sure when we went from horse and buggy to internal combustion, there were a lot of people who also felt that, you know, we were taking a huge step back because there were a lot of businesses that were tied to, I'm sure, feeding horses and building buggies, right? So it meant a pretty substantial upheaval in terms of the way that the business was being done. And there's a lot of people that lose, and there's a lot of people that win. So I think that's all fair, but let's talk about the tech. Are you good with that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that it's become politicized in the first place, because what you're dealing with at the end of the day is just different technologies to propel your vehicle down the road, and how that has turned into this huge life view changing aspect on what you believe and what you don't believe. It really has become the poster child of kind of where we're sitting at in our society, and it's just too much. I think that's fair.
So let's start with a little bit of history, right? Electric vehicles aren't new. I mean, once upon a time, there was a horse race between electric vehicles, internal combustion vehicles, steam-powered vehicles, right?
Sure.
Those were the three main contenders. And out of those three, the one that won was the internal combustion engine.
Although, arguably, it shouldn't have, because for a long time, the electric vehicle was in the lead by a pretty big margin. And I saw this really cool map from the early 20th century of Chicago that laid out all the charging stations throughout Chicago. And there were a huge number of them, and it was very cool to see that back in the day, right, they were seriously considering EVs as a viable source to kind of get you from point A to point B.
Well, I think I was watching some history shows about the early electric vehicles, and they were actually sold more to women than men, because unlike steam engines, right, which were dirty, loud, and potentially dangerous, right, because they could blow up, and unlike internal combustion engines, which were dirty, loud, and dangerous because they could potentially blow up, EVs were seen as kind of a clean technology where, you know, you could drive it without having a lot of mechanical knowledge. Another fact that people tend to forget when they have this argument is, you know, this goes back to the charging stations that you were talking about. When the Model T was first introduced, there were no gas stations, Tommy. I mean, people, you know, filled up their Model Ts at their farm because they had tractors, but the Model T came well ahead of the gas station in most parts of America.
And I think in a lot of instances, you would go to, like, your local depot to pick up fuel, right? Or your local hardware stores. Wherever you buy your fuel for your tractor or whatever is where you get it for your car as well. It's a great point, which is interesting. But ultimately, the internal combustion engine did win out. gas stations became more prevalent. Internal combustion technology advanced at a very rapid rate from the early 20th century through the mid-20th century, and electric technologies kind of faded into the background until the 1970s.
Yeah, yeah, and that's when there was a kind of a resurgence of electric vehicles. Of course, there's a bunch of like cottage industry companies that came out and built electric vehicles using lead-acid batteries. And just going back in time, I think one of the reasons that the internal combustion engine went out over electrification was the battery tech back in the 1900s was pretty ancient.
Yeah, it was pretty poor.
Right? I mean, you would not get more than, you know, 10 miles of range on an electric vehicle or 20 miles of range, right? It was... It was that bad. And just in terms of, you know, the physics of it, gasoline has a lot more caloric value than a battery can store. So the math is actually pretty common and pretty out there. And so we have purchased a Lightning. It's got 131 kilowatt hour battery, right? And when you do the math, that's about equivalent to 4 gallons of gas in terms of caloric value.
But I have to say, that's a that's a statistic that really bugs me.
Right.
Because that is one thing that is very important, obviously, right? But if you look at the physics of an electric motor versus the physics of an internal combustion engine, electric motors don't spend all their time wasting energy in the form of heat.
Yeah, that's one thing.
So if you look at like an efficiency table, gasoline engines, it's astronomical. It's something like 80% of the energy from gasolene is actually used to just
generate heat. So while gasoline has a lot more caloric value, right, a lot more potential energy.
Yeah, the vast majority of it's being wasted.
On actually creating heat.
Which then you have to cool off because you can't just,
You can't just create all that heat and not have things fail under the hood. So I think from an efficiency standpoint, the argument and the win in terms of technology has to go to the electric motor, which is when you think about it, pretty amazing that that Lightning was able to tow a 6,000-pound trailer, almost 100 miles on what would be the equivalent of 4 gallons of gas.
Well, let's keep going with the history. So in the 1970s,
yes.
America was plunged into the fuel crisis.
Yes.
There was the whole OPEC situation, right, oil embargoes. And basically what ended up were huge lines across the U.S., and huge increases in fuel prices, but more importantly, fuel rationing. So you had a lot of 70s American cars, which were these big 19-foot behemoths that were getting, 13, 14, 15 miles per gallon. And in some cases, you could only fill a few gallons up at a time, and there were fights breaking out. And it was I just read a long history about it. It was a super interesting time. I'd love to have witnessed it because it sounds like the Wild West.
I was alive during those times. It wasn't that interesting, but
But you were just a wee lad
in the
70s.
But it was no fun.
So the result of that, though, is folks started looking at alternatives to gasoline. And you ended up with, like you said, these cottage industries coming up with alternatives and to some extent, pretty successful alternative. So one of the most famous is this model called the City Car, which was this small, it's a two-seater car, which looks like a block of cheese.
Yeah, it's a wedge.
It's a perfect triangle. It used lead-acid batteries, which lived in the bumper, believe it or not, and then some inside. And it, I think it went like 40, 50 miles on a single charge at a top speed of 45, 50 miles an hour.
Yeah, so let's define lead-acid. We're talking about basic 12 volts that you would put under the hood of any car.
Yeah.
Just to start the car, right? The kind you get at the Pep Brothers or...
Pep Brothers.
Pep Boys.
Pep Brothers.
Or, hey, you just said feet instead of foot, so...
I know.
Before you start tearing into me.
I just like Pep Brothers. I think that's like the store brand version of Pep Boys. But no, you're right. Exactly. Although a lot of instances they use like 6-volt batteries, more like golf cart batteries, right? That can kind of have deeper charge cycles. But yeah, so there were these little little companies called City Car. There was that Denver company, do you remember?
Yeah, and there's a YouTube channel that's actually trying to bring one of those things back to life.
Yeah, and then that was more, I think, late 70s, early 80s. And that was an interesting time. And what I think is crazy, this is how desperate America was at the time. That little City Car, that little wedge of cheese, actually sold in surprising numbers for what it was. I think it was in the thousands even. They sold thousands of these little triangles.
Now, I know you love classics, but let's leave that to the dustbin of history, Tommy.
Well,
a lot of these things did not succeed, and for obvious reasons. They were poorly built. They didn't have enough range.
Oh, yeah, they were
pretty bad. It took forever to recharge, and it wasn't until GM came along with the EV1 that things actually got interesting.
So, yeah, so in the 70s, even the major manufacturers experimented with it, and there were electric concepts of popular cars, right. But they never really went anywhere. And then in the 1990s, we did see an actual attempt attempt at creating electrics that were sold or at least leased to the public. And there are three kind of iconic examples. So there was the Toyota RAV4 EV, which is a vehicle that was sold. I actually know a guy who's got two of them in Boulder, still original. The GM EV1. And then you had a couple of other kind of niche market ones. You had like the Ford Ranger electric. And I think there was a GM small like S10 version, which was electric too. But I think a lot of that was driven by CARB, right? And maybe this is where the electric vehicle started to get politicized. A lot of the first early attempts were driven by California legislation, right? And a push toward more sustainable transportation.
Well, also the thing that happened in the 70s was Earth Day happened, right?
Well, I think
people forget that California was, especially Los Angeles, was unlivable. There was so much
smog
that you wouldn't even, I mean, seeing the mountains was never a thing you would do in the 70s in California.
Thank goodness for the catalytic converter.
Right, we were quickly poisoning ourselves on this earth, and there was a realization that we, you know, can't just keep dumping. And it's not just about carbon, it's about everything else that comes out of a tailpipe, right? And do it tens or hundreds of millions of times every time you start up a car, and then live in a place where you can actually breathe. The two don't go along. And so I think there was this realization that we needed a cleaner technology that allowed us to keep the freedom that a car affords, but at the same time, do it in such a way where we don't kill ourselves.
Yeah, and then by the 1990s, the realization of that was those models, like the RAV4 EV, the GM EV1. And these were actually, we should mention, these were not just some home-baked things, right? You had millions and millions and millions of dollars behind the Toyota, and especially the EV1. And there's a great documentary series called Who Killed the Electric Car? I think it's a two-parter now. There's actually a first one and a second one, but really fantastic about the history of the EV1 and what happened there. But long story short, all of those relatively mass-produced vehicles from the 90s quickly died, and we were left with basically the same automotive landscape in the early 2000s.
And there was a lot of, let's face it, there was a lot of pressure from big oil to kill those things.
Sure, oh yeah.
You know, just as GM killed mass transportation in Detroit, right? GM basically killed the electric trolleys that used to run around Detroit mm-hmm. in favor of the internal combustion bus. Like I said, there was a lot of money at stake, and there were certainly vested interests to keep the landscape the way it was, because if you go in a very broad way from internal combustion to electrification, you're basically shifting a lot of money from oil companies to utilities to some way, right? Because the utility becomes the company that then benefits from that versus the oil company, which is selling less oil. And let's face it, Tommy, if all of a sudden everybody today started driving electric cars, the gas station would be dead, right? So all those companies that make money selling oil to us would see their profits severely decline, if not, you know, wither to nothing. So I think you have to understand kind of the geopolitical push to keep the internal combustion engine going, because a lot of people are making a lot of money with the current state of affairs, and that includes the car companies, right? That's why the car companies are dragging their feet in terms of electrification, because they're really good at building internal combustion engines. They know the business model for that. And then changing to electrification is very scary, I think, for a lot of car companies. Now, I'm not saying they should or they shouldn't. I'm just saying that's the reality of it.
Yep. So by the early 2000s, EV was basically dead again, and then it was revived in the late 2000s by a company called Tesla that came out with the Roadster, which was the Lotus-based sports car, but had a real range, finally an EV with over like 200 miles of actual range. It was insanely quick. And then we saw the introduction of the Nissan Leaf, which was kind of the very first mass attempt at an EV that was going to be in huge volume. That was like 2010, 2011, and then the Model S. And then now we're basically here, and there was some compliance things with CARB once again.
Well, let's define CARB. So CARB is a California Air Research Board, and they mandate, this is where people who don't like electric cars get certainly worried, because they mandate certain fuel economy numbers. And one of the things that they started mandating was that a certain percentage of cars sold in California had to be electric.
So we saw the emergence of what we call compliance cars, which are these vehicles which are basically to satisfy those requirements. So vehicles like the Fiat 500e.
Soul EV.
The Chevy Spark EV.
We've owned a lot of them.
And they are basically gas cars that were converted to electric. And great values, but not that impressive. And typically I think, about 80 miles of range.
I think those cars, and to be fair, I think also the Leaf set back electrification as a technology because what they had was all of the downside to electric vehicles with none of the upside. So what I mean by that is very limited range, less than 100 miles, and long recharge times with no potential upside in terms of either like speed or quality of drive, because it's very different. For those of you, you know, one of the things that I sense from those comments is that a lot of people who are anti-electric car have never actually driven an electric car. Or if they have, they've never actually spent and lived with one because it's a very different driving experience from an internal combustion engine car. And I'm not saying it's better. I'm not saying it's worse. I'm just saying it's very different. It's much more left brain than right brain. It's much more techie than like emotional. And these are things that I think people sometimes don't take into account when they think about what it's like to own and drive an electric car. And there's a lot of people who are left brain and there are a lot of people who are right brain.
I think you're being a little harsh on the compliance cars because they did offer a lot of benefits, right? If you had a short commute, they were perfect.
Yeah, they were cheap.
They never broke, very reliable. The batteries actually turned out to be pretty robust over the long term, which was good. And you could fill them up for pennies on the dollar. Electricity.
So the ones we owned, I pretty much hated.
Yeah,
every single one of them.
But you're one of these folks, which is very valid, who thinks you need more range than you really do.
No, I don't think I need more range. I know. So from Boulder to Longmont, it's like, what, 15 miles?
Yeah.
So to drive, and like that Spark EV we had, I would drive from here, I would drive up there, I would drive back here, and I'd have like 10 miles of range left.
No, the thing would do 75 miles in charge.
I'd have like 10 miles.
I drove it. But the thing is, it's a perception.
It's not a perception, it's a reality.
You see that battery indicator read 25 miles of range, and you start getting real worried.
Yeah,
25 miles will take you a long way.
As you should be, because if you're stranded, you know, on a highway with no power, it's not like you're going to, you know, get a can of gas and throw it in there and drive it to the next gas station.
Look,
Tommy, you are calling a tow truck and you are whatever precarious position that thing left you and you are stuck in that.
Did you ever get stranded?
No,
I never had to rescue you.
No, because I never wanted to drive those cars. And I think a lot of people are like that. You can't come from a technology where you can basically fill it up in 2 minutes on every street corner to one where, you know, you have to sit and wait and then get barely enough range to actually make it, you know, to the next city and back and call that a win. I'm sorry. I think that and especially the Leaf, because the Leaf had that same problems, just set electric cars back because they didn't put their best foot forward. And it's worse than that, right? Because those were the so-called affordable electric cars, right? Tesla had a car that had range, but when the Roadster came out, if you recall, they were $150,000, Tommy. That even makes things worse, because if you're like a normal Joe, let's say, and you're out there like, hey, you know, I'm having a hard time feeding my family or paying my rent, and then you're forced, which is what you feel like you're being forced, to buy an electric car that barely gets enough range for you to, you know, spend one day driving it, and then all the cool kids in town are buying $150,000, and what I mean by all the cool kids in town, I mean all the Silicon Valley folks are buying $150,000 electric cars and talking about how great they are. It does not do much for the image of the electric car. It doesn't.
Okay. Now, I still think they're cool because I'm a weird nerd and
I'm not saying they're not cool. I'm just saying that kind of rollout where the everyday car became a kind of poster child for all that's wrong with electrifications, and the cool electric car was $150,000.
Yeah, it's a problem.
You know, it created this dual
perception
of electric cars that remains to this day. And let's be honest, Tommy, nobody. Maybe GM has yet built nobody has built the Model T of electric cars.
I think Tesla has for a lot of ways.
Tesla has not. They promised they would, but they're very sneaky, right? Every 2 months they up the price of the Model 3 or the Model Y to such a point where it's no longer affordable. And Tesla promised to build a rear-wheel drive affordable Model 3. They built like four of them and then gave up on it.
Yeah, that's a problem. But the Model 3 launched in 2018, really popular car, kind of started the new age of EVs, right? We saw a lot of other OEMs putting serious efforts in with long-range EVs. Now you've got the Volkswagen ID.4, you've got the Hyundai Ioniq 5.
And none of these cars are below 50,000.
Yes, they are.
No, in real-world numbers are
so
not.
An Ioniq starts in 39, 40.
Yes, but nobody's selling those. One, first of all, the car manufacturers aren't building those because they make a lot more money on the more expensive ones. And then because of the weird situation we're in right now, dealers are actually taking those that could be potentially affordable and, you know, adding market adjustments to them, making them unaffordable. So realistically, if you want to get into an electric car today that's any good, right, you're going to be looking at probably $50,000, with the exception of the Leaf, which, you know, has already, the Leaf's reputation is burned. It had, you know, bad battery tech from the get-go. It still has bad battery tech. You know, they're still not climate controlling their batteries. The only potential affordable electric car out there is the Chevy Bolt with a B, but they built this little tiny, you know, like runaround that is just, it's like the Chevette of the electric car world. It's electric, but it's by far it's not desirable or cool or, you know, like.
It's a little harsh to say it's Chevette of the electric car world. Chevettes would rust out if you looked at them.
Size-wise, it is.
It's much bigger than a Chevette. Chevettes were horrible little cars, Dad. That's a pretty mean thing you just said. They were very unsafe, extremely unreliable, and would rust out at the slight glints of moisture.
I mean, I'm just looking at the products that the manufacturer builds, right?
So it sounds like
the product that Chevy and GM are building right now is a Hummer EV that's $112,000.
Now I'm just going to
that's the one that's like, you know,
completely frank with you, Dad. Yeah. If you're a new listener, welcome.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you hate electric cars. You've been very cynical. So let's hear some of your perspective.
I'm just trying to put myself in the shoes of people who made all those comments.
Okay.
And kind of trying to walk a mile in their shoes to see why I feel like these vehicles are not for me.
Now, here's the thing, because we're going to split up here. And I know we're going to split up here because we had this argument time and time again. I think electric cars have a place in society. I really do. Now, I completely agree. The new ones are just too expensive. The barrier of entry is very high. But if you can afford a used one, $10,000, $15,000, now because gas is expensive, it'll be more like $20,000. But like BMW i3s, fantastic cars. I think all the compliance things, great city commuters. If you could have a car like this where you can commute to and from work, but have a backup gasoline car for your long trips, I think that's a really smart move because you can fill up an electric car in a lot of cases for a couple bucks, under $2, depending on how much you pay for electricity at home. Now, where I know we're going to split up is on the case of the F-150 Lightning, because the folks commenting on that Lightning are looking at the truck as a truck. And I don't think if I were to buy a truck today, I'd buy an electric truck because of what we learned in that video. Now, when your truck is not towing, that Lightning is fantastic. I mean, you can easily get 250, 280 miles of range realistically. It's fantastic. But I think people that are buying trucks, those commenters, are looking at it as a way to tow their trailer. They're looking at it as a tool or as a way to go camping. And I think if you're looking at it like that, it doesn't make any sense to go electric.
So, I mean, a truck has to do three things, right? There's three main use case scenarios for a truck. It's a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's a tool, then you've got to haul and you got to tow.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Hauling is, in the testing we've done, isn't really affect electric range unless you're hauling something that sticks out way above the bed and then you're creating more drag. Then it does affect. But weight itself doesn't necessarily affect range.
Sure. Yeah.
The other thing it has to do is it has to be like a vehicle, right? You have to be able to drive and use it to move your family, use it to, you know, go get ice cream. And in that use case scenario, an electric Lightning is just about as good as an F-150.
Sure.
Where it does fall down is long distance towing. Now, there's two kinds of towing. There's in-town towing. So if you're a landscaper and you've got, let's say, a lawnmower or a lawn equipment, you're moving around town, and you're driving 100, 150 miles a day, you're going to be fine, right? It's when you hook it up to a big brick in the wind, aero diminishing trailer that you're going to really lose the range. But reading those comments, and I'm going to put on the other hat, I felt like those people were being extremely unfair. I felt like, you know, even that city boy is like somehow, like all people do in Texas is, you know, tow a 6,000-pound trailer to lunch, to church, to work, right? This is not all the trucks do. And I think they also completely ignore the upside to the electric vehicle, right? And in Texas, you should, if you do this, you should be doing it at your own peril, because the coolest thing I think about, there's two really cool things about the F-150 Lightning. For me, one of the coolest things is it can power your house. Let's put some numbers on it, right? So the average house in America uses 29 kilowatt hours a day, and that includes everything. Air conditioning, oven, heater, whatever it is. And the Lightning has 131 kilowatt hour battery. So if you plug that vehicle, and it's not cheap to do that, it's thousands of dollars to put in an inverter in your house, but if you plug that vehicle into your house and take your house off the grid, you're going to get 4 days in a typical American house of being able to power your house if the truck is fully charged. Now, if you wanted to do that with a Tesla Powerwall, a 10 kilowatt hour Powerwall costs $10,000. So to get 130 kilowatt hours of storage, you'd pay $130,000. So from a battery standpoint, not only is it a bargain, it's also a bargain you can drive. And I think people are completely ignoring that use case scenario. And like I say, in Texas, which has, I think, arguably the country's worst and least and most deregulated and least reliable power grid, you know, you're doing that at your own peril, and you're being silly, and I think you're being short-sighted, because that Lightning can solve a significant problem you can have in Texas. That's number one. Well, that's the biggest.
And let's pause for number one, because I completely agree. I mean, that's an amazing feature of an electric truck, but you also have to look at the flip side of it. The power grid's down. You need to charge up your truck to go somewhere. You're not charging up that truck. It's a problem. You know, that is a problem.
So that's a perfect segue to the second part, right? You know, one of the things I love about America, and I think this is a very American, I'm not even going to say conservative or Democratic, it's just a very American thing, is self-sufficiency and self-reliance. And electric vehicles allow you to do that. And I think this is the thing that all of those people are missing, right? They think that it's a bunch of greeny weenies who are trying to force them to be environmentally efficient, or you know, have a less impact on the environment. What I love about the truck is that it allows me to be self-sufficient from, you know, big oil and big electricity. Because what you can do with an electric truck is you can, especially the Lightning, you can't do it with any other vehicle right now, but with that ability to both charge the truck and then to power your home, you can build a system out, which is going to be expensive. I'm not saying it's cheap, but you could build a system out where you can completely take your house off the grid and use the truck and solar panels on your house to live completely off the grid and be completely self-sufficient. And even if you don't want to go to the trouble of doing that, right? So let's say you that's too expensive, which you can, because you need solar panels, and then the Lightning becomes your storage unit. It becomes your power wall. You still have, with any electric car, the ability to use your house as a gas station, which I think is absolutely brilliant, right? You never have to go into a gas station ever again unless you're potentially road tripping. You can go every day, you come home, you plug it in, you charge it up, and you drive it around the next day. And if you've got 300 miles of range, you do that every 3 or 4 days, and you never touch a gas station. And I love that, because it makes me much more self-sufficient and keeps me away from having to depend on oil. And the thing that, like, let's say if you're a prepper, right, and you're like, well, I don't want to have to depend on oil because, you know, at some point that can be shut off, just as electricity can be shut off, right? You can always generate electricity using wind, solar, water. Oil, right, you have to actually go and drill, which is undoable for a normal human being. You have to process it. And then even if you store it, it goes bad, right? So if you want to keep oil, it doesn't work. Our gasoline goes bad after a few years.
Diesel. Diesel's good at holding.
Diesel stays better for longer, but it eventually will also go bad. What happens with diesel is it gets fungus.
So
it does. It's crazy.
This is the thing that, I mean, here's my, I got a lot of things to say here.
Okay.
So you complain that we don't have enough cheap electric cars, and you're going to spend $50,000 for an electric car. Outfitting your house with solar and a transfer switch, that could easily be $50,000. Easily. I mean, just the transfer switch that we got quoted at our house was $10,000. And then the electrician said, I probably wouldn't do it because your house wasn't wired properly. No, that's a pretty big, that's just $10,000 for just the switch. That's not even the solar panel install, which could easily be $40,000, $50,000. And then add the price of a Lightning, which realistically starts at
$50,000. It's funny. People find money for stuff that they believe in or things that they want to spend
money on. Yeah, but that's a lot of money. I can find $100 to spend on something I want. I can't find $50,000.
How much is an AR-15 and all the...
Not $50,000.
It's not cheap,
not
Tommy.
Not 50 grand.
How much is one of those like barrels full of survival dehydrated food?
Not $50,000.
No, Tommy, those are thousands of dollars too. All I'm saying is people find money for the stuff that they want.
That $50,000 is...
Wait, you're also...
Hang on. It's more than the average American makes an entire year just for solar panels.
You're also being a little like way off the continuum. So we just talked to Sunrun about taking our ranch house, which is a 1,500 square foot home, right, and putting in an inverter. You know how much they want for that?
How much?
$2,000.
That's great. That's fantastic.
$2,000, and that.
But what about for the panels?
That's it. $2,000 for the inverter.
We need the panels if you want to go off the grid.
I'm not saying off the grid. I'm saying $2,000 to plug in that. We bought the charger, which was $1,200 for the Lightning, which lets you charge the Lightning or reverse it. And it's $2,000 for the inverter, which includes installation. So for the cost of basically $3,500, we can use that truck, and we will do this as a way to power the house that we have, a 1,500 square foot home.
But you're still on the grid.
But
I'm saying if you want to, like you were claiming you want to go off the grid like a prepper, you need to install solar panels.
But I'm saying that allows me to power the house from the Lightning.
For 3 days.
4 days.
Yeah, and then you have to go back on the grid.
Yeah, but most blackouts are rolling.
Yeah, but I'm saying the argument you were making earlier very clearly is the pro of it. You can go completely self-sustained.
To put in solar panels, yes, of course it's going to be a lot more expensive, but for the cost of $3,000, you know, that's an AR-15. That's a survival bucket.
But you're not off the grid.
You're
not off the grid. You're just allowing backup power, which is great. I think that's fantastic. But it still is not off the grid. If you want to go off the grid, you got to spend a lot of money on panels.
It's off the grid for.
And the other thing too is, I mean, the other argument you could make for say you get a cheaper set of solar panels. It's $15,000, $20,000, $25,000. For $20,000, I can buy a lot of diesel. That's a lot of diesel I can buy to propel my vehicle for
until you can't.
Well, I don't think diesel's going anywhere anytime soon.
I'm just saying, until you can't. That's the way a lot of people think. You could buy a lot of diesel until you can't.
Well, why couldn't I? If you can't buy diesel, then the country's going to shut down because there's not going to be any trucking.
And that's what preppers do. That's the moment in time they're waiting for. That's why I said, until you can't. And people believe that we're heading in that direction right now.
Well, if we head in that direction, we got bigger problems than driving around.
Right?
We're not going to have food to eat.
Yes, but once again, now we're going down the prepper route. This is exactly what people are thinking. That's what a prepper is. You're preparing for the time when it all goes to hell. So you can be self-sufficient and you can defend the stuff that you have.
If I'm going to be a prepper, I'm going to buy an old Mercedes diesel and then I can grow my own fuel, which is
you could, you could.
It's going to be much better than relying on $40,000 for the solar.
But look, gas is gone, you know. Finally, it's gone down.
Let's take the prepper out of it, because I think we both agree that's kind of the fringe minority here. Gas and diesel's not...
No, I was transitioning. So,
okay.
So let me transition. I'm with you.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere anytime soon.
So gas is finally gone below $100 a barrel. So let's talk about the other thing that is wonderful about electricity. It's just a lot cheaper.
Sure, that's great.
I mean, a lot cheaper. So let's put some numbers behind that, and we can talk about how much it costs to charge at home, how much it costs to charge at a public, charging station, and how much it costs to charge or to fill up a car. So let's say that fuel in Colorado is $5 a gallon, right? So the average fill up, I just filled up the ZR2, it was almost empty. I put it at $108.
All right, pause.
Yes.
Let's do a little bit of math.
Yeah, let's do the math.
So say you want to go 250 miles.
Okay.
And your vehicle gets 15 miles per gallon.
Let's be generous.
Hang on. Let's just do 15, because that's pretty good. Do you want to do 20?
Yeah.
All right, so say your truck gets 20 miles per gallon.
I think that's fair.
And you go 250 miles. So 250 miles divided by 20 miles per gallon. So you use 12.5 gallons to go 20 miles, or to go 250 miles. So 12.5. Now, say gas is $5 a gallon.
Which it is.
Right. So let's multiply that times 5. So those 250 miles would cost you $62.50, right? $62.50.
Right.
Got that in your head?
I got that in
So let's go ahead and let's use the Lightning, right? So say on the Lightning, you go 250 miles. The truck averages 2 miles per kilowatt hour.
Yes.
So we're going to go 250 divided by 2 miles per kilowatt hour. You used 125 kilowatt hours to go 250 miles. Make sense?
And at 43 cents a kilowatt hour.
How much that's way too expensive.
That's how much you're going to pay at Electrify America if you're not a member.
Yeah, so let's want to confuse people. Let's say you're charging at home.
No, let's do all those. Let's just give them
the beer. Well, let's do best case and worst case. I'm going to do best case first.
Do worst case.
I'm going to do best case first. So 125 kilowatt hours, and at home we pay 13 cents per kilowatt hour. That would be $16 to drive 250 miles.
Versus?
$62.50.
Okay.
$62.50.
All right, now let's go worst case.
So worst case is in Electrify America. Let's say you're paying 43. Okay. So 125 times 0.43, $53.
So even the worst case.
Yeah, but that's
is better than the than.
It's not a lot better.
Yeah, but that's the very very worst case, and because you're not a member and you're paying an outrageous amount.
Now, if you are regularly fast charging your electric vehicle, don't buy an electric vehicle. It's not worth it.
Well, how much do you save? Is it like 10 cents a kilowatt hour if you're a member at a year?
Yeah.
So it'd be 33 cents, right?
No. It'd be 125 times 0.31. It'd be about $39. Here's the thing,
though. So about half of what you pay.
How much is your time worth? I mean, if you're going to Electrify America, you have to have you have to do something while you're in Electrify America because it's going to take
you shopping at Walmart.
45 minutes. Yeah. See, this is the thing. You just broke your own argument. If you are in a position where you do not have a place to charge at home, do not buy an electric car. It makes no sense. You're going to spend so much time waiting in Walmart parking lots. You're just going to hate your driving habits.
Right, so
the greatest thing about an electric vehicle, like you said, is you can fill it up at home.
All right, so Andre and I drove the Lightning from Detroit to Colorado, which was 1,300 miles, and we stopped 11 times to charge. 11.
Yeah.
And if you had a gas vehicle, you'd probably do it maybe three times, let's say, right?
Yeah.
1,300 miles, you could do three times. Let's say getting 400 miles on a tank full. Now, Andre came to me and he said, you know, I've got this app that I use. I spend 2 hours on a better route planner to plan the route to minimize the amount of time we are going to spend charging,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you don't want to go all the way to zero and you don't want to charge all the way 100%. There is some strategy involved here. This is what I mean. Electric cars are left brain. And if you love that, then it actually makes it fun and challenging because it sometimes, you know, just because things are easier doesn't mean that they're better. I think that's another misconception that people have. I remember when I moved to Prague, when I went from communist to capitalist, and we had to go like to Germany to buy Diet Coke. You'd be like, oh my God, you had to go to Germany? And you know what? At the end of the day, in that culture, don't think you didn't like live. You felt like you had lived the day because challenging things make life sometimes worth living versus being able to get anything anytime. But that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, you're not pitching me on that one.
You just got to live it, Tommy. It's hard to explain until you live it, right?
Yeah, but I would rather do anything to not live that life.
But
that's the thing.
I mean, I've been watching the show called Alone, right, where people go out and just challenge themselves to live completely, you know, alone in bear-infested northern Canada. Why do they do that, right? Because there is, you know, why do people do triathlons? Why do people, put themselves in these very difficult situations because you feel like you're living life?
Sure, but anyway, that's elective.
That's a whole nother thing. So where was I going with this? I already forgot.
I have no idea.
What were we talking about?
I have no idea.
So Andre used this better route planner, and I was like, Andre, this is not how I want a road trip. Right, I don't want to have to drive when a computer program tells me when to drive. I don't want to have to stop when a computer program tells me when to stop. I want to stop when I'm hungry. I want to drive when I'm feeling good. I want to stop when I have to pee. So he got really mad at me, and I don't blame him. But I said, you know, we're just going to wing this. And over 2 days, we stopped 11 times. And you know how many times we stopped out of those 11 because we had to instead of because we wanted to?
How many?
Once.
Oh, me and you road trip very differently.
Once.
If I have to stop 11 times on a road trip.
Well, because you have to pee, you have to get lunch, you have to get dinner.
But not 11 times.
Well, 2 days. So breakfast, lunch, and dinner, that's, you know, over 2 days, that's six stops right there. I'm not making this up. I'm telling you what happened.
I know.
I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. I'm not trying to make it, you know, better than it was. It was like, hey, I got to pee. Let's stop. Okay, the next Electrify America station is, you know, 5 minutes away or 20 minutes away. I can hold it that long. Let's stop there. And while we pee and go look for some beef jerky, plug the thing in and let it get some more power. That's what we did. And it turned out okay. It wasn't, you know, by the end of it, at the last, I hate to say this because it makes me sound like a city boy, but there's not a lot of places to stop in eastern Colorado. So by the last Walmart, I was pretty burned out on Walmarts.
Mm.
and, you know, sticking around in parking lots and Walmarts. But for the most part, it wasn't an unpleasant trip. And it took us 5 hours longer than it would have taken us had we had an internal combustion engine car. And what I would say, Tommy, is, yes, time is money, but people sometimes value their time more than, you know, than the reality of the situation. So, the fact that, you know, when I say it took us 5 hours longer to drive that 1,300 miles, I could see, like, people going, what the hell? I'm never going to do that. But I'm like, you know what? Sometimes life's in the journey, not in the destination. Live it.
Mm-hmm. Not convinced.
So what are you doing there?
Doing something very interesting.
Okay, what's that?
So our editor, Grant, just drove the Lightning from Colorado to Sacramento.
Yes.
And that's because we're putting a four-wheel camper on it, the whole thing. And that's
because we're going to Alaska.
Our Alaska journey. So I've been doing a little bit of math, because the cool thing is in Electrify America, he only charged in Electrify America except for once when he charged overnight at a hotel, which was a great thing about EVs. You can charge where you're sleeping. But anyways, I have all of the data here, which I'm just adding up. Mm-hmm. So it was about 1,100 miles, and it cost him $178.29, which is pretty darn cheap to go 1,100 miles.
And that's using public charging.
So let me go 1,100 divided by 178.29. So, that was wrong. Anyways, it was pretty affordable, right?
How much would that cost you 1,100 miles at let's say $5?
Okay, so 1,100 miles,
that's
say,
being generous.
Say you're getting 20 miles per gallon.
Yeah.
So you use 55 gallons of fuel. And multiply that times $5 a gallon.
Yeah, which is cheap.
It's $2.75.
So he paid, he saved about $100.
Yeah, but look at all the time he used. So he spent 4 minutes, 38 minutes charging, 42 minutes charging, 55 minutes charging, 38 minutes charging, 37 minutes charging, 35 minutes charging, and 42 minutes charging. Divided by 60 minutes in an hour. So he spent 5 hours charging.
Yeah, so it's pretty much the same thing that me and Andre did.
It's a lot of time charging, though, don't you think? Over just an 1,100-mile road trip?
I think people, you know, in America, you know, you can't stand spending 3 minutes more at the Starbucks because the person in front of you can't decide whether they want a macchiato or an Americano, right? And so people here, I think, value their time probably more than it's worth, especially when I look at the fact that, you know, the average person probably spends 4 hours stuck a day, you know, deep into their phone looking up, you know, Bernese mountain dogs that are jumping for joy because, owner. You see what I'm saying?
Think like that because they want to be looking at Bernese mountain dogs jumping. They don't want to be
stuck at you look at Bernese mountain dogs jumping while you're charging?
Because they don't want to be stuck at a Walmart for 5 hours.
But you see what I'm saying? You see people somehow value their time because they think that it's, you know, they don't look at that reality of how they're actually spending their time versus the kind of the way that they want to spend their time, right? If you see what I'm saying.
I mean, here's the fundamental issue, Dad, for this road trip. So you save $100, right?
Yes.
Which is substantial. I'm not saying that's not substantial, but in a gasoline truck, you would have used 55 gallons of gas. That's two fill-ups. If you have a 30-gallon tank, you would have been filling up for 8 minutes versus 291 minutes.
You also realize that gasoline is a finite resource.
Why?
And like my friends, this is another thing I don't quite understand. My friend Fred is a very smart guy, and he makes a point which I completely agree with, which is gasoline is too valuable to burn, right? This is stuff that is going to run out, and you could be using it to make interesting plastic things. And what are you going to replace gasoline with once it's no longer there? You're going to make interesting cars out of wood again, right? Everything in our world is made out of gasoline. So why are we burning it? Why aren't we saving it for like the stuff that once it's burnt, it's gone?
I agree, but you also have to realize gas is not going anywhere anytime soon.
It is.
It just can't.
Oh no, it is. It is because people see. Here's the other fundamental issue that people have. People can look at small things and kind of compartmentalize them and understand them, right? So like if 10 people are killed, people are horrified by that. But if 100 million people are killed, that number is so big that it just stops comprehending. It doesn't make a lot of sense. You have a hard time processing that. And this is exactly what's happening with fuel, right? The vast amounts of fuel and gasoline that we are burning you know, it seems like, and we're very sure, we've only been doing it for like 150, 200 years, right?
Right.
And so it's taken, you know, hundreds of millions of years for that stuff to be, you know, turned into millions of little tiny creatures had to die. You know, immense pressures had to be used in the earth. These are just facts, right? You can argue a lot of stuff, but these are simple facts that are true, that turned, you know, all that biomatter into gasoline, and we are using it up at an astonishing rate, And I worry because, you know, I want you to have kids and I want to pass along a legacy. What's going to happen when we run out of that stuff?
Yeah,
is it worth $5, you know, to burn it versus saving it for, you know, really interesting and other uses? So that's one thing. I don't even want to go into the whole carbon because that becomes too politically supercharged. So I don't want to talk about that. So let's not talk about that. Let's talk about another advantage of electric vehicles. Now I'm you know, on the other side, right? The lack of maintenance. You know, I think it would be fair to say that most people listening to this podcast probably are sick and tired of dealerships,
sure,
right? And the shenanigans that dealerships play, right? This is another self-sufficiency thing. You do not have to take your electric car, I think, ever to a dealership if you don't want to, because there's no oil to be changed, there's no fluids to be changed, there's, you know, no, very few of the, if you're using one pedal driving, you're probably not going to burn through your brakes, right? The thing has virtually no maintenance outside of poor build quality, which is a Tesla issue.
Well, I don't want to...
We've owned enough cars.
I know.
The only time we've ever taken one of our electric cars in for service, mm-hmm, and we've owned a lot of them now, right?
Yeah.
Has been because of poor build quality.
So,
not because of the routine maintenance that has to be done on internal combustion engine cars.
First of all, they're not maintenance free, right? You still have suspension bushings. You still have wheel bearings.
The everyday stuff like oil changes, fluid changes,
sure,
stuff that has to be
There's
done.
There's longer service intervals, but they're not maintenance-free. You still have wheel bearings that can fail. You still have CV joints
that
can crack.
But that doesn't fail till 100,000 miles.
Unless you're Tesla and our Model X CV joints were failing at 3,000 miles.
Well, once again, poor build quality.
But I don't want to make it seem like – and then you got this other question. Just to play devil's advocate for a second, right? Batteries have done a pretty good job, unless you're an early Nissan Leaf owner, have done a good job of lasting over time. There's a lot of Teslas with 400,000 miles, which are still at 90% of their usable battery life cycle. But then the question is, if your battery does fail, if you do run out of capacity in the battery, where does it go? There's not a lot of great battery recycling programs in place. Sure, it can go into solid state energy for businesses, like industries, right? So an electric vehicle with 80% of its battery life remaining is pretty useless in an EV. But 80% of a capacity for a factory that wants backup power, that's an option. But in terms of actually recycling the raw materials, there's not a lot of really great processes
in
place yet.
Is it like the gas station issue with the Model T? When the Model Ts came out, there were no gas stations. And eventually, people figured out that there was a business to be had by building gas stations. So if there's enough batteries out there, will that create enough incentive for an industry to develop around
recycling
batteries or using them? Like, the thing about a battery in a car is it only has so much life as a car battery before, you know, because it takes an immense amount of power to actually move a car. But that battery is still good for a power wall, right? Let's say you lose 20% of its capacity or 30% of its capacity,
which is what
a Nissan Leaf loses. That is perfectly fine for a power wall. You could use that battery and create a power wall out of it and have no issues. And then, of course, then there's the question of people are like, well, you know, I don't want to be dependent on the rare earth minerals that you need to create a battery. I don't want it to be dependent on lithium because, you know, it's being mined. But you could say the same thing about oil, right? We recently became pretty self-sufficient on oil because we did more drilling. But before then, we were, like you brought up during the oil crisis, we were completely dependent on OPEC. And when OPEC turned off the taps, it killed our economy. So why can't we have a more diverse way of moving things and moving us around so that we're not beholden to one group of people, be it the oil industry, be it, you know, the different cultures and countries that control oil, including Russia right now, right? I mean, don't you want kind of a diverse portfolio of different technologies so that one isn't dominant and can't be shut off?
I don't know.
These are just things that I'm speaking out loud, right?
So here's where I'm at with EVs. Mm-hmm. I was playing a lot of devil's advocate. I love them. I think they're fantastic. Mm-hmm. I strongly recommend buying them. You know, I know we don't want to go into the whole climate thing, but it's true. Even if your EV is fueled entirely by coal, it is still much better for the planet to burn that coal at the source than in your tank. There's just tons and tons of science. Well, I think that argument needs to be shut down immediately.
Well, because when you're burning oil in a car, you're basically just heating up an engine.
Right.
You're not using it to actually generate power.
Even if your electric vehicle is burned entirely by the least efficient coal plant, it is still has a net benefit for the environment versus burning it at the production, transportation source.
I think the point I was trying to make was it's pretty amazing that you could tow 6,000 pounds on the equivalent of 4 gallons of gas.
No, that was not impressive because it went 86 miles. So here's the thing, but here's where I'm at. If you are a family with a multiple car situation, sell the car. Just sell the car. You're just wasting gas. It's expensive. You could be filling up at home. Buy an EV. Buy a used EV for $20,000, $25,000. Get yourself a BMW i3. Get yourself even an old compliance car and use that as a city commuter because they're fantastic and they're fun and they're quick and they're quiet and they're better in every way than I think most commuter cars. They're just amazing. Hang on. Can I finish?
Yeah.
But
of course.
For those trips with the boat to the lake long distance, for those camping trips, I would probably keep the gasoline SUV or truck in the garage. That's where I'm at right now. Because that Lightning is an amazing truck. Absolutely love it. But it's $80,000 and it just will not tow the trailer to the places I'd want to tow it if I had a camper.
So here's where I'm at, Tommy, with this. I think before you made up your mind because of whatever political bent you have that EVs are not for you, just drive one.
It's not going
to
be enough.
Drive one and try to live with one and actually figure it out for yourself. Don't let the commentator on TV, don't let the podcaster, and that includes us, sway you. Just try it. See if it works for your lifestyle.
I completely agree. And that's why I say get rid of the family car. Because it's much easier to convince someone to get rid of their kid's 2008 Camry for a 2014 Focus EV. Hang on, let me finish. It's much easier to convince someone to get rid of the car that they don't rely on to get them across country than the one that's towing the camping trailer.
You're making the car buy argument. I don't want to even talk about
but
the car.
But here's the thing.
Let me talk
that
now.
That Lightning is realistically 60.
Let me talk now.
60, 70 grand.
Let me tell you what I think.
The average American can't spend 60 or 70 grand on a truck.
Can I tell you what I think? You're making a car buyer argument. I don't give a rat's ass about the car buyer.
Well, you should, because that's people buying cars.
I know, but that doesn't interest me, really. You know, one of the things that I think that we have this tension at CFL is some of the videos we do are for enthusiasts, some are for car buyers, but a lot of it is just stuff that I find interesting. And, you know, from a very personal standpoint, one of the first things we did was we took the Lightning to Bandimere, which is, you know, our local quarter-mile drag strip, and it blew away most cars that it lined up against. And there were two Tesla Model S Plaids there that nobody would line up against. And the reason for that was because they are so freaking fast and they make speed so easy and so affordable and so attainable. If you wanted to go as quickly from 0 to 60, in a quarter mile as a Tesla Model S Plaid, now we're looking at a 9.5 second car, that would not cost you $120,000. You would have to buy a dedicated dragster and then convert it into a more of a dedicated dragster to get into that 9 second range. You can do it, you know, walking off the Tesla showroom floor. And you know, at the end of the day, you could talk about the sound and the fury and blah blah blah. But you know, I like winners. And if you line up against a Tesla Model S Plaid or a Lightning, you're going to be a loser.
So
no, my argument is at the end of the day, the technology that is quicker wins in a drag race.
That doesn't matter if I need to tow a trailer.
Listen, so there are like five different use case scenarios. But, so in a trailer towing contest, the Ford will lose.
Right.
But a Bandimere, it will win.
But why am I buying a pickup truck?
At the wallet, it will win.
Why am I buying
because
a pickup truck?
Because you don't, because like I said.
I'm not buying a pickup truck to go fast. If I want to go fast, I'll buy a Corvette.
Tommy, it's not, the reason I'm talking about a Model S Plaid is because obviously, you know, the thing I think I'm walking away from that is that not only do I have a truck that does 95% of everything that a truck will do and does it better.
The 60% of a truck will do.
No, 90%.
Towing, I think, is 40% of a full-size truck use case.
Once again, Tommy, I'm sorry. You know, I have lived and breathed trucks for the last 12 years. I know a lot of truck guys and gals, and not one of them tows a 6,000-pound trailer 100% of the time.
Doesn't matter. Even if you tow a 6,000-pound trailer 1% of the time, that 1% is going to suck so badly, you're going to sell that truck and buy a gas truck. It's true.
Wow. So people are that short-sighted.
Yes, they are. 100%.
One use case scenario that it's worse at, it's like going to toss the baby out with the bathwater because I can't tow my trailer across country with this truck. So even though it's cheaper to run, even though it's quicker, even though I can take it camping, I can power the whole campsite with it, which you can, even though I can take it to the work site and power the whole work site, which I can, even though I can tow a small trailer across town all day for as long as I want, which I can, even though I can take it home and power my house with it, which I can't, even though I can never have to ever go to the gas station, which I can't. All that doesn't matter because the one time I need to tow a trailer, it doesn't do it as efficiently or as well as my Cummins. So I'm sticking with the Cummins. And I may be right.
I think I am right.
Maybe people think that way. And if they do, we're in deep, you know what, as a country.
I don't think so.
Because we are, Tommy. Because what you're saying is your politics, right, are now ahead of where kind of your brain should be.
It's like
you know what it's like? It's like Idiocracy.
God,
it's like pouring Gatorade on crops. That's where that is going.
My politics aren't ahead of it. My need to tow my camper to Wyoming is ahead of it. It has nothing to do with politics. It's true. I need to tow my camper to the Grand Tetons because I want to take
You want to tow your camper.
Yeah, that's true. I want to. I've been waiting all year to take that family vacation. I've rented my toy hauler, and I can't tow my trailer to Yellowstone.
First of all, why can't you tow it to Yellowstone?
Because there's no charging in Wyoming. There's almost nothing.
What? No, you can tow it. It's just going to take you a lot longer. It's going to be a bigger pain in the
ass. So I've got 2 weeks of vacation, and I'm going to spend roughly 3 days of those waiting at chargers.
Once again, you're being.
Did you see on a 2 day road trip, Grant spent 5 hours getting from.
Yes,
at chargers.
I thought we had that argument.
That's
already.
Over 2 days with no trailer.
Yes.
So let's double that. So it'd be 10 hours extra charging if he was towing a camper.
Yes.
Let's be generous, 10 hours.
Yes.
Over 1,100 miles.
Yes.
That's pretty bad.
Yes, for that one use case scenario.
But that one use case is a very important. It's a full size truck. People buy the full-size truck to tow that trailer.
I disagree, Tommy. I think people – it's like – you know what it's like? I absolutely disagree. You know, people buy Jeeps because they're going to go off-road, and yet 95% of people who buy Wranglers never go off-road.
But it's the thought that they can, and that one time they take it off-road is that one time they're like, hell yeah, I bought the right Jeep. 100%.
No, it's not even that. It's like the one use case. You could take it off-road. It's just not as efficient or it's not as good off-road. Or you can take it off-road, but you can't go cross-country off-road. You know, that's a more equivalent argument, right?
I don't think
like,
so.
It does tow. It just doesn't do it very well. And it costs more time and it costs more effort to do it. But not that it doesn't do it.
Another great argument. People buy the Porsche 911 GT3 RS, which is a strict track car, and never take it to a track in a million years. But they do it because they know if they wanted to take it to the track, they could. That thing sucks on the road. Terrible road car. Just get a normal 911. And that's how I feel about EVs.
Once again, I think that's a bad...
I think it's a pretty good point I'm making.
No.
You can discount it, but maybe the viewers will agree. I think it's absolutely true.
People want their trucks... I'll flip that around. It would be like saying, I'm not going to buy a 911 because I can't take my family to church.
No, because that's not the use case of a 911. The use case of a full-size truck is to tow a camper. That's why Ford
says...
Well, then why does it tow 10,000 pounds?
In 1932, the use case of a truck was to haul crap and tow so with them. I agree. Right? That's what trucks were. They were work tools. You go to Texas, and this is happening not just in America. It's happening in Europe. Trucks are now becoming the family haulers.
Sure.
They're 99% of the time. They're not hooked up to anything.
Doesn't
they're not
matter.
Hauling anything. Listen, let me just be real. They're not hauling anything heavier than a mattress, right? And so, maybe if you pretend that you need to take, a bale, a 30,000-pound thing of hay across the mountains, it's not going to work. Get yourself a Cummins. Hell yeah, get yourself a Cummins. But let's be realistic, Tommy. In Texas, most people are not towing to work. They're not towing to church. They're not towing to vacation.
So why are they
Every so often, they will tow something. And even, look, we took a camper that was, let's face it, a brick into the wind. Maybe what we need to do is actually, let's hook up that Lightning to a trailer and throw on some side-by-sides, right, that isn't this giant brick into the wind, and see what kind of a degradation in range we get. Because we took the worst case scenario that we could on purpose.
It's not a fifth wheel, and it was only 6,000
pounds. We can't do a
fifth
wheel with a full size truck. Come on.
But my point is, I mean, it was bad, but it's not the worst thing in the world.
It's about the worst because you can't do it. Once again, nobody does a fifth wheel.
And we were still.
If you do a fifth wheel with a full size truck,
I disagree.
Get a heavy duty truck.
We weren't worst case because there was nothing in that thing. We didn't have a family. We didn't have it loaded up. We didn't have food in it. We didn't have a side by side.
You also were going uphill.
1,000 feet of elevation. That's not a particularly difficult route, Dad. Fort Collins to Castle Rock.
Wait. The Achilles heel, and this is true, of electric vehicles are hills. They really are.
Yeah,
they
but are. That's yeah. that. Unfortunately, that is something cars need to traverse is hills.
Right, but what we that's why the Ike is such a great towing test.
But this wasn't the Ike.
Because
this was 1,000 feet of elevation.
I'm just saying, Tommy. That's why. Because we live in Colorado. A lot of people live in Florida. You know, we took a Jeep to the highest point in Florida. You know how many feet above sea level it was?
Like 100 feet.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where most people live. So so once again, we are at, I think the other thing that people forget, and you know, is that we are at the Model T stage. We are at electric vehicles 1.0. We are really at the Model T stage of where electric vehicles are in
100%.
Terms of battery, right? And so and we are at like internal combustion engine 50.0, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And yet, with most things, except for long distance, big ass towing, an electric vehicle is better, more fuel efficient than the gas equivalent of it.
Yes, and it's cheaper to run, and you can power your life.
And so why is everybody like focused on this one scenario? The only reason that you would do that, if you were practical about it, right? If you're gonna buy a house, right, and you want three bedrooms because you've got three kids or whatever it is, and you need a yard, right? And the one thing that you can't have in the house is a pool because you want to spend the entire summer in the pool. You say, I will not buy a house without a pool. I get that. People are like that. But it's not fair to compare that to the equivalent house and say just because it doesn't have a pool, the other house is horrible and it's bad, because then it's not your brain talking, it's your heart talking.
Yeah, but this is where I think we're going to disagree, because an F-150 is not missing a pool. An F-150 needs to have a kitchen. Towing is the kitchen of a house.
I disagree.
It is fundamental.
In 1930 it was, not today.
Have you seen, have you ever been to the Colorado mountains and seen perhaps all the line of campers being towed by Silverados and F-150s?
I have lived trucks. I know what people use them for.
It doesn't matter if 99% of the time it never tows. That's why I'm saying get your car to do that. Make your electric car go to church. Make your electric car go to the grocery store. Save the money there. Save the truck for towing gas. And I would think you're right. We're on electric.
Actually,
can I finish? Yeah. We're on electric technology 1.0. I wouldn't buy 1.0. I would wait for electric truck technology 3.0 to buy it.
I'm actually in the exact opposite camp that you are. I think electric trucks are such a good use of the technology. I would rather have an internal combustion engine car than an electric car. I would. I seriously would. But I would rather have an electric truck than a regular truck, because I think the truck.
But you don't tow long distance though. we've never gone camping with a trailer. We don't do it.
Because
it's not something we do.
Because a truck has so many inherent advantages. And to me, the biggest one, like the killer app, like I said, is this fact that you can power your house with it and you can use your house as the gas station. I think those are just killer apps. And yes, you know where I think this is going to end up? People, you know, can pass around this video and you can make your argument that because it doesn't tow, it's not ready for prime time. The second that the next power outage happens, which it will happen, and your neighbor shows up with an F-150 in an emergency and, you know, plugs in their F-150 into your refrigerator and saves all that meat that you have or that you've been saving for the 4th of July, and, you know, then that person is going to be the hero, and the next vehicle you're going to buy is that F-150 Lightning. So, yeah.
Nope.
I promise you that is how people are, because it is a hero truck.
There's an obvious solution. You know what we need? We need a plug-in hybrid truck. A truck that will go short distances to the church, to the grocery store, electricity,
That's what Ram is apparently working
on. But will still tow long distance on gasoline.
Right.
That's an obvious solution.
That's what Ram...
Right?
No, it's not an obvious... The problem with a hybrid is then you're carrying along two powertrains.
But I think...
We've seen this in Germany. So what happened in Germany is companies gave huge incentives for people to buy hybrids to electrify, right? It's kind of the baby step toward electrification. And what ends up happening in that regard is people never end up actually using the electric part of it. They just drive it around, and then they fill it up with gas, and they drive it around, they fill it up with gas, and this is what happened in Germany. They never actually plug it in, right? People have 4xEs out there that they will never plug in.
Sure,
and
well, that's fine.
And then it's not
but
fine.
But let them make the choice.
Then you've got from a use standpoint, you're toting around. It's the worst of both worlds.
Sure.
Because you're not saving any fuel. You're not creating any less maintenance because you still have an internal combustion engine you have to fix, right? And you're wasting more fuel because now you're carrying around two powertrains that you have to maintain. It's just kind of silly.
First of all, you said there's no maintenance on electric powertrain. And second of all, I think it's a great use case for a truck. I really do. For a car, I agree. I think it's silly to have two powertrains. But for a truck, drive on electricity in the city, drive long distance on gasoline or diesel, I think it's a fantastic idea. And the other thing, too, is if you want to power your house in a power outage, you're much better off in a lot of ways buying a power boost hybrid. Because then you're not tied to the battery dying. You can fill it up with gasoline if you need to off of a jerry can. And the power boost hybrid doesn't put quite as much electricity out as the full EV, but it puts out a lot of electricity, 7.2 kilowatts.
But the problem is it doesn't store electricity.
It doesn't. I don't want it to store electricity in a power outage. I want it to be able to power my house. In a power outage, I want as much potential energy in the smallest amount of space.
What you're saying there then is instead of getting a solar backup for your house, just get yourself a generator, and that way you can go to the gas station, and when the power goes out, you can fill up the jerry can and then empty it into your gas generator and power your house. That's the argument you're making. And
yeah.
I'm like, that's a silly argument. Then just do that. What I want to be is completely independent. I don't want to have to go and fill it up with gas. I want to have a storage unit that I can fill up myself for my house
without having
an oil company to actually, you know, drill it and refine it.
If I had 50 grand, I'd be all about it, but I don't have $50,000.
It's not 50 grand, Tom.
It is. That's solar panels are expensive. We've been quoted $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 on our house.
It's not 50 grand. There are incentives out there. And that's the other thing that I don't get. You know, I'm not a big – look, I believe in choice. I definitely don't want people to feel like they're being forced to go into electric. That's why I'm saying go and test it, see if you like it. If you don't, fine. I would hate to see a situation where the government is forcing us to go and do something that we don't want to do, right? I really believe in the best technology should win. But if the government, on the other hand, is handing out checks for $7,500 for me to switch, then I'll be stupid if I don't try it out, right? If the government's giving out free money, if you're not taking it because of whatever reason, that's just silly.
Well, that's it's not that easy. This is where it really frustrates me, too. It's a $7,500 tax credit, but that's only if you make enough money for your tax liability to be $7,500. And this is, once again, where it's favoring folks on the higher end of the income bracket. I don't make enough money to get the full $7,500 tax credit, so it advantages someone who has a higher income than I do to make that switch.
So the conservative argument would be just make more money.
Well, I can't. It's not. I mean, that's not that
that's
easy.
A very democratic.
I just put all my money into solar panels. How am I going to make more of it?
Make more money.
Maybe figure, if I had to put that money
out,
into
figure it out. Take advantage of it.
Look,
pull yourself up by your bootstraps, Tommy.
I don't think this was a productive argument. I really don't. So
well, let us know in the comments below what you guys think. Look, like I said, at the end of the day, try it. Before you say no, give it a try. Borrow one. Go to Turo. You're saying, how do I borrow? They're out there. You can go get them on Turo. You can get them from friends. You know, there are places where you can try electric cars. And certainly, if you're worried about, like, the cost of it, there's a lot of those California, which I hate, but they're out there. And they're very affordable. You said yourself the BMW i3 is a really good vehicle. You don't have to have an $81,000 Lightning. You know, you could get yourself a $15,000 i3.
All right, well, let us know what you think. See you in the next one.
Why are you so depressed?
That's just too much arguing. I just get tired of it.
Okay. All right, see you guys next time. Ciao.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.